Everyone has their own unique views and needs when it comes to financial success. If you'd like to leave your financial woes behind and live a life of financial freedom, you've come to the right place. Welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton. The show will help you with the ins and outs of money. We talk about financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars and keeping you up at night. We talk about money, tax reduction, saving more, spending less, 401ks, risk management, retirement, and everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. Now, here is your host of Saving with Steve, Steve Sexton.
Welcome to Saving with Steve, where we talk about the ins and outs of money, pretty much everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happier relationship with money. My name is Steve Sexton. Welcome to the show. Just want to say thank you for sharing us with your friends, families, and associates. We had well over 337,000 viewers and listeners last month, so we're very excited with that. Now, last year, over 663,000 people moved out of the state of California, many just because they wanted to go to a lower tax state so they can save a dump load of money, okay? And the same thing's happening with New York, New Jersey, Illinois, because they want to go to a tax-free or a low-tax state. Now, the reality is these states don't like losing your tax business, and they want to make you make sure that you're not doing anything wrong so they can keep that business. So, you know what? You want to learn how to pass the state, what it's called, domicile test. That's why we have Brad Galbraith here, creator of the changemydomicile.com. He's going to help you good folks just walk you through it. Now, we'll also be talking about the 7 big tax scams that are hitting here in tax season. And how would you like a technology tool that can forecast risk for investors? How would you like a tool that enables you to help identify when risk is too high so you can get yourself out of the market? Hey, you want to stick around. We have Sean Rolls at Watchpoint Analytics. He's going to walk us through it. Now, what I'd like to do is tell you a little bit about Brad Galbraith. Now, he's an attorney. He's a CPA. He's the author of state-specific domicile plans. Now, like I said before, people are looking at ways to reduce taxes. A lot of times that's just moving from one state to another. Some people, don't realize that their former state wants to keep their hands in their cookie jar from a tax perspective. And if they ignore the rules on how to change your domicile properly, hey, you could come up with a lot of stress like taxes, audits. It could be estate issues. It could be lots of things. So that's why we have Brad. Brad, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Steve. Looking forward to it.
And as I said before we got started, when our viewers and listeners heard about you being on here, this is a big topic because taxes are going up all over from a state perspective. And quite frankly, many states become unaffordable. So one of the best ways is to move out of the state. Now, help me understand how you got involved with the changing the domicile business, so to speak.
Yeah, sure. Many years ago, I guess maybe 20 years ago, I was practicing law in Indianapolis, and my wealthiest clients kept retiring and moving to Florida. And they kept saying to me, what can you do to help us? And I would say, well, I'm not licensed in Florida, so I really can't. And I'd have to refer them to someone else. And I realized pretty quickly that referring away my wealthiest clients who were tuned in to this domicile issue probably wasn't the best long-term strategy. So I took the Florida bar, opened an office in Florida, and ever since, I've been helping people from higher tax states make that transition to Florida.
I just got to say this. I've talked to many of my advisor friends, and I've had even some clients where they figure they can split a state, or one spouse is domiciled in one state and another in another. And for some reason, they're getting audited. They're getting hit with penalties and all that kind of stuff. What determines somebody's state they're domiciled in? What determines that? Let's start there.
Sure. Well, for the most part, when we're using this term domicile, it's good to specify that a lot of people call that residency. Mm-hmm. Most states technically call it domicile. But you can, of course, have a residence in more than one state, but you should, for tax purposes, only have one domicile. And so there's a lot of your listeners, certainly, who pay state income tax to multiple states. But there is one state that is their primary residence, and they may be paying paying state income tax, for example, in California because they own rental property in California. They may pay in Illinois because they have rental property in Illinois, but they happen to be domiciled in New York. And so their worldwide income is subject to tax in New York, minus some of those taxes that are paid in other places. So in general, when we use the term domicile, we're talking about really kind of tax residency. Now, what determines your domicile is state specific. That's one of the things that we have talked about a little bit. It's really not about the state you're moving to. It's the state you're coming from, because every state has their own laws. That's just the way it works in our United States. It's not a federal law that determines which state you are domiciled in. It's your state law. So there are unfortunately plenty of cases that actually went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court about what state a person was domiciled in. And the argument oftentimes was, hey, I've got more than one state saying that I'm domiciled in their state. Federal government or federal courts, you resolve this. And the answer has really been, for the most part, hey, states can have different laws. If you aren't smart enough to make sure that you are only domiciled in one state, there may be more than one state that tries to claim taxes. And so we have to look very specifically to the state that you are trying to change your domicile from, not just the state that you're trying to change your domicile to.
So in other words, whether you're New York, Illinois, California, which are some of the biggest, and New Jersey, some of the biggest tax states, you really need to make sure if you're going to be living in Florida or in Texas or some other like Tennessee tax-free state, you really need to look at that. Like, for example, you probably deal, well, you're from Indiana. So Indiana has, what kind of, like, I'm just going to ask about Indiana. What kind of rules or domicile tests does Indiana have compared to Florida?
Sure. So I can even be a little bit more specific than that. I would say, in general, about half of the states in our country have a two-pronged domicile test. The other states have a one-pronged domicile test. The two-pronged domicile test, the first part of the test is typically a number of days test. New York is probably the most famous of those states, where they say, if you have a place of abode, if you have a place that you can live, whether rented or owned, and you are in New York 183 or more days, then you are a statutory resident and there is no reason to move on to the second prong of the test. You are a resident of that state for their tax purposes, and any of the other things that you've ever heard of that you're supposed to do just simply won't matter. About half of our states have a law like that, where there is a number of days. Now, that the number of days can vary a little bit from state to state, but most of them are in that 6 month and a day category. Ohio is the one very unusual state where they don't have 6 months in a day. They have 7 months in a day. They actually are more liberal, surprisingly. And they have said, in order to hold on to as many people as they can who will continue to come back to Ohio in the summertime or off season, they've said, you know, we're going to be really liberal. You could be in Ohio up to 7 months. And if you intend to be domiciled somewhere else, we won't count that against you. So that they've gone the opposite direction of many states. And their thought is that way the former residents can continue to come back to Ohio, own second homes, do their banking and investing and go to the doctor there and give to charities there. And they've decided that that's what's best. But in general, half of the states have this number of days test. The second part of the test in those states, and the second part and the only part of the test in most other states, is an intent test. Mm-hmm. And it is based upon your subjective intent. And unfortunately, there's no MRI machine that we can run a person through that lights up green if you intend to be domiciled in Florida and lights up red if you intend to be domiciled in New York. It doesn't work that way. And so every state has come up with different factors that they may look to objectively determine what your subjective intent might be. And that's what really varies very significantly from state to state. In some states, they say whether you have a safe deposit box in their state is extremely relevant. And in other states, that's just not even mentioned. Mm-hmm. In some states, in only a few states, they say where you give to charitable organizations really shows where your heart is. And if you still give in your former state, that's very indicative of your intent. And yet other states say absolutely positively, we will not consider that because we don't want to harm the charities in our state. And so it is very state specific when it comes to down to those indicators of intent.
Okay. So now so basically what you're saying is you can only have one domicile, okay, where your tax state is. You can't have two.
Well, certainly two states could argue about it.
Okay.
But you do not ever want to have more than one domicile, because that means two states are arguing over which one gets to tax you the most. So that would be a disaster. So we want to be careful so that you should not ever have more than one state of domicile.
Okay, so here's the next thing. Can you live in one state and be a domiciled resident of another? And you just talked about that 183 and stuff like that. Is there any states that have issues with that?
As long as we're talking about a second residence,
okay,
then most states recognize, really all states recognize, that you may have a residence in their state and yet not be domiciled in their state. Now, as you might imagine, the people who are being audited, for the most part, those are people who have a home in both states. Mm-hmm. Those also happen to be all of my clients. My clients don't typically live where I live in Naples, Florida, year round. It gets rather warm in August, mm-hmm. and they tend to head back north. So most of my clients have a residence in more than one state. And the fact that they have a residence in a northern state doesn't mean that they are going to continue to be domiciled there. But it does mean that we probably need to be even more careful in making that change of domicile, to dot the I's, cross the T's, do as many things as possible so that it will be very obvious that the intent is to be domiciled in Florida, despite the fact that there is still a home up north. Now, the fact is that one of the analogies that I really like to use, that is kind of a visual that you can think of, is an apothecary scale.
Mm-hmm.
So when looking to these intent tests, to the various factors, what we want to do is we want to pile up as many factors in favor of your low tax state as possible.
Yes.
You pile up whatever still weighs in favor of your northern state, and we want your low tax new state to greatly outweigh the other state. That doesn't mean that there's nothing in favor of the northern state. You may still have a residence there. You may mm-hmm. have children there. You may still own a business there. But what we want to do is we want to make sure that if a fact finder, if a court or a taxing authority were to ever take a look and audit or even litigate, we want it to be very clear to them that this case just isn't worth pursuing, because you've done so many things to heavily weight that apothecary scale in favor of your new state.
Perfect. Hey, we're going to hold on right there. I want to talk to you about many of those things that people can do when we come right back. So we're going to take a break. Got to pay some bills. We'll be back in a few minutes with Brad Galvin.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve Show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve Show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve Show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us, savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hello, I want to welcome you all back to the Saving with Steve Show. I want to truly thank you for tuning in. I appreciate you letting your friends and family and associates know about the show. All the replays are available at savingwithsteve.us. Again, that's savingwithsteve.us. If you're enjoying the stories of helpful information and insight on Saving with Steve, then I encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel so you never miss a show. And check out a few of our affiliates at UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, Talk Radio New York City, E360 TV, and Las Vegas TV Network. All these networks are dedicated to empowering you to solve problems and then lift your spirits, as well as live a life of financial personal freedom. Also, follow us at Facebook and join the Saving with Steve Insiders Club. At savingwithsteve.us, you get all the replays, exclusive gifts from our guests, and more. So with that, we have Brad back. We're talking about the factors that people look at. Now, what specifically are some of those factors that the, you know, the franchise tax board here in California or whatever it is here there in Florida, would they be looking at as factors for somebody's domicile?
Yeah, and I can provide a bit of a list of those things that are somewhat universal.
Yeah, please.
Those things that really apply in most every state across the country. The word of caution is that doing just those things that are general may not be everything you need to do for your state. But some of those general things are the things that are really almost just obvious. If you're going to change domicile to a new state, you would get a driver's license in that new state. Mm-hmm. You'd register a car in that new state. You'd register to vote in that new state. If there's a homestead exemption, you would file for that homestead exemption in your new state. And one thing that may not be quite as obvious, but is true in many of our states, is if you're changing to a new state, there may be a form available either through a county or the state franchise board or the Department of Revenue, the taxing authority for the state, that allows you to complete an affidavit that says, as of this date, I intend to be domiciled in my new state. So in Florida, every county has one of those. It's called a declaration of domicile. It's completed in front of a notary and you just swear that that's your intent. Mm-hmm. You then record that with the county, putting everyone on notice that that's your intent. Now, that's not going to do it. That's not going to be the determining factor. But it is very nice to have a very clear piece of paper that says, it is my intent as of February 25th, 2021, that I intend to be domiciled in my new state. So those are some of the universal things. But there's a few others that are certainly worthy of mention. And some of these are a little bit less obvious. I mentioned a safe deposit box earlier. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not relevant in every state, but I would say in at least half of the states, that appears either in case law or regulatory materials or state publications, that may be very indicative of a person's intent. If you have a safe deposit box still in your former state, it sounds like that really is your intended long-term, that's the place where you intend to eventually return.
Okay.
And that could be a problem if you're ever audited for domicile. A couple other things that are interesting that people don't always think about. One of those might be professional licensing. Mm-hmm. Many of us and many of your listeners are professionals of one sort or another, whether they're an attorney or a doctor or a nurse or a realtor or appraiser, you name it. If you think about it, you register as a professional with your state. That's a state database. If the state wants to determine whether they're going to audit you or not, a very simple thing they can do is look and say, all right, well, this person is still a licensed physician in the state of California, yet he says that he's now domiciled in Idaho. That doesn't really make much sense to us. We better inquire more. Mm-hmm. And so if you're changing your state of domicile, it doesn't necessarily mean you have to give up your professional licenses. If you're ready to, you know, even better. But in most instances, people want to at least change from a resident licensed physician, as my example, to a non-resident licensed physician. If there is no differentiation between resident and non-resident, at a minimum, change your address. Do not continue to use your in-state address for those purposes. Use your new state address for those purposes.
Okay, so and, what about things like a doctor?
Yeah, and that varies by state. It's interesting, though. Most states will say that when trying to determine your intent, again, there is no MRI machine. There's no easy way of determining that. And it's just a little bit too obvious to just ask, you know, do you have a driver's license in your new state? And so what many states will do is they'll look to some of these less obvious things that they believe that if you were really intending to change your domicile, you would probably find a dentist and a primary care physician in your new state. Depending on the state, they may ask about other professionals, insurance professionals, financial professionals, accounting professionals, tax professionals, lawyer. Do you have these professionals in your new state? At a minimum, do you have them in that new state and maybe still in your old state with them coordinating? But there should probably be some connection with the new state. Now, that varies by state. Again, interestingly, I mentioned Ohio earlier. Ohio, when passing their laws, made the intentional decision to not count those things.
Okay.
In fact, what they wanted to do is have their state residents who are changing their domicile still go back for medical care in Ohio, still have the Ohio banks as their banks, still have the Ohio investment professionals and CPAs and lawyers. So it does vary by state. But in most states, your choice of physician, whether you have that in your new state state or your old state can be indicative of intent.
Okay.
Similarly, things like social and religious organizations.
Your church.
If you're a lifelong member of the Methodist Church in your northern state, it would only make sense that if you were changing your domicile to a new state, that you'd probably find a Methodist church or some church at least to attend in Florida. If you're a lifelong member of the University of Michigan Alumni Association, you'd probably join the University of Michigan Alumni Association of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
You would likely do those things. You'd also surround yourself with if you've been active in charitable activities, you'd probably find some of those charitable activities to do in your new state.
Okay. So what are the things that people should consider before changing their domicile?
Yeah, certainly. I think it would only make sense to do a financial analysis and make sure that it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that happens when you change your domicile is you give up your homestead exemption in your current state in order to get the homestead exemption in the new state. Almost every state says you can't have a homestead exemption in both states. Homestead exemptions are for the most part reserved for those people who are domiciled in that state. And some states, the homestead exemption is very significant. Just as an example, in Michigan, the homestead exemption is very significant. I've done the analysis for clients before where we ended up deciding that their savings on income taxes were outweighed by the additional costs of giving up the homestead exemption. So it is important to not just hear that the new state is better, but to do the financial analysis, figure out whether it really makes sense to make that change. And if you're going to do so, when do those financial benefits kick in?
Yeah, no, that's great. Now, as I told you at the beginning, there's a number of people that we know that have gotten audited over this. So how do you defend against an audit, a domiciled state?
That really is a great question, because at the end of the day, that's what we're all concerned about.
Mm-hmm.
If you make the change and you get audited, you know, oftentimes you've already lost. Because if you're making a change and you're going into retirement, looking forward to spending some time with the kids and grandkids on the golf course, and you end up in an audit, that's just not what anybody wants.
No.
So I would say it is very important when you make your change of domicile to know the state that you're coming from, to know it inside and out. And that is the idea behind changemydomicile.com, making sure that you have a state-specific list to go through. Keep records of everything that you change. If you're changing from a safe deposit box in your high tax state to a safe deposit box in the low tax state, keep that information. Have the records as to when you changed, when you closed the old box, when you opened the new one. Just gather information about the date that you registered to vote in your new state, the date that you gave up your homestead exemption in the former state. Keep all of those records. And importantly, because many states do have this number of days test, track your number of days so that if you're asked, you know for sure that you're in good shape, so that even if you're audited on that number of days test, that you're not going to run afoul of the laws.
Okay, so now what I need you to do, because we have about a minute and a half left, I'd like you to talk about changeyourdomicile.com, how people can go and get involved with you, how people can get involved with that so they can change their domicile right so they don't get hit with the audit and the stress and all that.
That's great. Great. So yes, at changemydomicile.com, what we have done is we have gone through the 20 highest tax states and done a specific state analysis for each of those states. What we have done is we've outlined so that it's easy to determine what is the financial benefit of changing from that state. What is the income tax rate in that state? How does the property tax exemption work in that state? Does that state have a gift tax, an estate tax, an inheritance tax, so that you can actually go through and quantify the difference between the two states? And then what we have done is we've gone through the state statutes,
mm-hmm.
state regulations, and case law for each state. And we've pulled out the information that is specific to that state domicile decision so that it's all in one place so that our clients can read through that and see what they should be doing. And then we make it even easier. What we do is we have created a checklist for each state, very state specific, that based upon California, for example, what are the things that California says they will look at so that you can go through that checklist one by one, keeping records as to the date that you made each of those changes.
Mm-hmm.
And so in doing that, your chances of audit, your chances of triggering an audit go way down. And certainly if you were to be audited, you at least know you've dotted the I's, crossed the T's, and that you're going to be successful in that audit if you've done the things on the checklist.
Thank you, Brad, for being part of the show. What's the best way that it's changemydomicile.com is the best way for people to get in contact with you, get the information and so on, correct?
Absolutely. Changemydomicile.com. And once there, there's some free information and then there's a link where you can download your specific state's package.
Brad, thanks for being on the show. This is a big topic. We'll probably have you back. So stay safe down there in Florida. We'll see you.
Great. Thanks, Steve.
Bye-bye.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us, savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hello, welcome back to the show. This is Steve Sexton. That was Brad Galbraith talking about changing your domicile. This is a big thing nowadays because many people are moving from a high tax state to a low tax state, looking to save a significant amount of money. If you'd like to do that, you can obviously review the show, but you can also go to changemydomicile.com to find out exactly what you need to do for your specific state. Now, next, one of the biggest things that's coming up is tax season. We're right in the middle of it. Oh my God. But you have to be aware of the scams that are occurring because there's seven new ones. It's interesting. First of all, we have, you know what, the Social Security scams, right? We're just going to go through all those. And you know what? There's certain scams where they've evolved around the Social Security number, but the new one is they're claiming that they'll suspend or cancel your Social Security number. Okay. This is basically a scare tactic and to get you to answer, return a phone call to get your information. You need to know if this occurs. You just need to hang up and block the number. Okay. IRS personal email, impersonation emails, phishing scams are common tactic among cyber thieves. And some of these I just got this last night, so it might sound like I'm reading a little bit, but here's what the deal is, okay? They're not limited to tax-related scams. However, one of the common tax scams is to send a variety of legitimate-looking emails appearing from the IRS, okay? Then they contain subject lines like automatic income tax reminder or electronic tax return reminder. They'll provide links for a temporary password, okay, to access your file and get your refund. Now, these files, you have to understand, are malicious and contain malware, which means they can track all your steps in the computer, all the little key codes, and take your financial information. I haven't wanted to do this. Remember, the IRS will never contact you via email. Don't open up the email from anyone claiming to be from the IRS, and certainly don't click a link or download files from these, okay? Next, calls from what's called the Taxpayers Advocacy Service. Hey, guess what? This is actually a legitimate service or an organization inside the IRS. But you know what? The Taxpayer Advocacy Service will never call you. You have to call them. So if you get a call, the scammers, you know, they demand payment or may claim you have a refund waiting. But either way, they're trying to get personal information or get you to send them money, which means they're stealing from you. So make sure you understand that. Next thing is ghost tax return players. You know what? This is a big thing. It's happening all over the country. And basically what's happening is you have so-called preparers. They typically don't have any sort of credentials for preparing taxes, okay? They may require payment in cash or not provide a receipt. They also invent income or claim fake tax deductions to boost your refund, demanding you pay in the form of percentage of your tax refund. You know what? You need to know that legitimate tax accountants CPAs, enrolled agents, people with a preparer's tax ID number, and I know this because I used to have a preparer's tax ID number, will have the credentials that qualify for them to handle taxes. They'll also never promise you a large refund. They will offer you several payment options, won't try to pad your return, and will always sign the return, including their preparer's tax ID number. So the big thing here is this. If they don't sign your refund, ask for cash, and they don't have a taxpayer's ID number, they're fake. They're a ghost tax preparer. We have seen people come into our firm and say, hey, what's going on with this? Because they got an audit from the IRS, and it was on the year they got the highest tax return. Well, they had one of those ghost preparers do it. Watch out for yourself. The next one is unemployment benefits. Oh, geez. Because of the pandemic, millions of Americans lost their jobs permanently or even temporarily in 2020 and received unemployment benefits issued by their state agency. Okay. However, in some cases, criminals sought to exploit the situation, filing fraudulent unemployment benefits using stolen identity. Okay. I want to be clear, this is a $39 billion problem in the state of California. Because of unemployment benefits are taxable income, you're going to get a form 1099-G, okay? And in box one, it's going to show unemployment compensation. But here's the issue. If you didn't receive the money, okay, that means somebody stole your identity to file for unemployment. And if they did that, you're going to need to talk to the state agency that deals with unemployment to get the form corrected, okay? Now, if you can't get your form corrected in before you file your taxes, make sure you file your taxes on only what you actually received, all right? And make sure you put a notation that your 1099-G or that unemployment compensation is false or erroneous, okay? Next, one of the big things we want to take a look at is the natural disaster scams. Now, this is happening here in Texas, in any state that actually got hit by that cold front there with all the snow. Texas had no electricity. They had no water. We're even seeing parts of this with the pandemic. It's just crazy. But the IRS wants to remind people that criminals and scammers are trying to take advantage of the generosity of taxpayers who want to help victims of major disasters. The fraudulent schemes normally start with unsolicited contact by telephone, social media, email, or in person using a variety tactics, which means they're going to come and see you. Some are going to impersonate charities to get you send money or get your financial information. They're going to set up bogus websites using similar names to legitimate charities so you send in the money. They're even going to claim to be working on or before for the IRS to help victims file casualty losses or get big refunds. Others are going to operate bogus charities and solicit money or financial information by telephone or email. Okay, so it's important that you check the charities out. Check out your Better Business Bureau. Check out the FBI and also check out the IRS website. Next, phone scams. Oh, there's a sophisticated phone scam that's targeting taxpayers, including recent immigrants. They use video relay services to try and scam deaf and hard of hearing individuals, as well as people with limited English proficiency, and they're making the rounds through the country. Callers claim to be IRS employees using fake names, fake ID badge numbers. They know a lot about their target, and when they call, the caller ID says IRS. Victims are told that they owe money to the IRS and must be paid promptly through a gift card or wire transfer. Victims may be threatened with arrest, deportation, suspension, a business or driver's license. In many cases, the caller becomes hostile and actually insulting. Victims may be told that they have a refund due to try and tick them to share their information. Hey, the scammers are all obviously asking, you know, leaving urgent messages for you to return, okay? Now, here's the thing. I don't want anybody to get scammed. And I see this happen a couple times a year, every single year with people. So here's some tips that you need to know in order to make sure you don't get scammed. Now, here we go. The IRS does not initiate contact via email, text message, or social media to request your personal and financial information. They also don't make phone calls. They send letters. Next, they will not demand immediate payment using a specific payment method, meaning prepaid debit cards, gift cards, or wire transfers. They always mail a bill first. Now, it is your right as a taxpayer, and you'll be given the opportunity to question or appeal the amount you owe. They will not demand you pay taxes without offering you this opportunity because this is your right. Okay. In fact, it probably won't get too aggressive for you for a few years. Okay. They will never threaten you with action from law enforcement. They cannot revoke your driver's license, your immigration status, or your business license. So that's important to know. And the IRS recently started doing in-person visits for those who've owned taxes for a long time. If you do get someone at your door claiming to be from the IRS, they should always provide you with two forms of ID, a pocket commission and an ACE SPD-12. That's an H, Harry, Sam, Paul, David, 12. They need to have that card. You have the right to see these and to confirm their credentials. If you ask to confirm those credentials, they should be willing to give you an IRS phone number to do so. Now, if you think you're involved with a phishing scam, forward at thephishing@irs.com. If it's a tax scam and you're not sure, all you need to do is go to the IRS website, look for tax scams. Go to the FBI website. There's many different websites that you can go to make sure you get the information that you're not getting scammed. So you know what? I want to thank you for being part of this. You know what? We had Brad Galbraith talk about how to properly domicile your state so you don't get hooked up with, you know, your former state's taxes. We just talked about tax scams. Next, we have Sean Rolls. So we'll be back then with just a couple moments.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve Show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve Show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve Show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us, savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Welcome back to the show. We just had a wonderful segment with Brad Galbraith talking about domiciles here in the United States to save people a lot of money in taxes. We talked about tax scams. And now we have Sean Rolls, WatchPoint Analytics. And you know what? Just to give you some background on Sean before we get into WatchPoint Analytics, for nearly two decades, he's been a wealth manager and an active portfolio manager from some of the largest banks and world's largest wealth management companies. He's the author of multiple white papers on investments, and he has an upcoming book called FinTech, The Evolution of Money from Bullion to Blockchain. I see that you're a financial historian and your view of how our relationship with money has changed over time. You know what? Sean has lived and worked in countries like the UK, France, Bulgaria, China. I mean, we're just happy to have you here. And I'm looking forward to talking to you about how we can better identify risk using utilizing your WatchPoint Analytics. So Sean, welcome to the show.
Great, Steve. Thanks for having me. And I appreciate your interest in our work.
Well, before we get going, I just like to, hey, how did you get started on this?
So basically everything you just listed is essentially built out of necessity. You know, like yourself, I've been an active asset manager for two decades now. And you know, what's funny about my career is really, I almost feel like I've had more crises than good years with respect to markets. You know, I came into the business during the dot-com bubble collapse. And then since then, obviously we've had all of the additional crises. A lot of my work and research really started during the Great Financial Crisis. And what it was is essentially, as we went through that, I realized we had to have better tools. There had to be a better way to identify these risks before they hit us and were, you know, cast headlong into a tailspin. And so that's really where it started. And I kind of dove into macroeconomic research. And over the past 8 years, I've been given a lecture on applied macroeconomics. How do we take take all this information and then and use it to make better decisions with respect to putting money to work. And in recent years, I was really able to kind of refine that down into a digital product. And so Watchpoint Analytics is me releasing that information to the general public, the average investor. It's in my mind, we're kind of democratizing wealth because a lot of this information hedge funds and sophisticated players have had for years, but the average investor was really kind of lacking this type of analytical tool. And so what we've done is we've created it. We're rolling out, systematically rolling out our tools, and there'll be a substantial amount of them added over the next 6 months. And what we're trying to do is kind of level the playing field and give the average investor an ability to read the economic environment a little bit better so that they can make better informed decisions with respect to risk.
Okay, so you know what? This is one of the questions I've been waiting to ask, and a lot of viewers were asking, you know what? When I was looking at your website and the things that you talked about, I noticed there is a notation to the fact that you saw that potential, that drop that happened last March, or the potential for that drop that was happening last March. So how does the software go about figuring that out?
Yeah, so actually it registered for the US market. It registered that we entered a high risk environment on March 2nd. And what, you know, what the software is telling you is when we enter a high risk environment, you need to lower your risk exposure. And we offer a lot of different templates, and we give you, you know, basically 4 decades worth of back testing to show you how those templates weather the overall market if you kind of follow that guidance. But the key theme was something wicked this way comes is essentially what the software was telling us. And if you're a user of the software, we went into a moderate risk. We went from a low risk to a medium risk in 2019. And so you were able to kind of telegraph that something was coming. We didn't know what it was going to be. But as we rolled into January and then February of 2020, clearly everybody was looking around and saying, okay, there's something starting in China and it may be coming this way. And then the software triggered on March 2nd. And so it still got you out before you really had to experience the depth of that initial panic in March and that what I call the COVID crash. Mm-hmm. And the way the software works, basically what we're doing is we've back tested all of this data to look at several different indicators in the macroeconomic environment. And we've distilled all of that down to give us essentially a kind of a crisis alert tool. So this isn't a daily tool that's going to, you know, help you get in and out of markets on a high frequency basis. Mm-hmm. What this is doing is it's telling you when there's a very high likelihood of a large macro event, and it just gives you enough heads up that you can bring your risks in if you're conservative or if you're in a position that you're vulnerable and or if you just simply don't want to go down, you know, with the market.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? I something that brings to mind is a story from an article from Santa Clara University where they were analyzing what happened before, in 2007 and 8. And they noticed that the market kept going up, but the institutional players were leaving it and the market was still going up because it was all the individual investors who thought this market could never end, this could never end. And all of a sudden they're holding the bag. And this would be a tool that would enable somebody who's not an institutional investor to understand how, hey, you know, risk is way too high. I need to dial it back.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's often the case that the smart money is able to get a heads up and get out early. And it's usually the retail investor that's kind of left behind or left holding the bag. And you know, from the GameStop shenanigans that we've had recently, there's a lot of conversation about this. And you know, what I'm trying to explain with Watchpoint Analytics is this isn't going to solve the world's problems, but it is going to give you, you're going to be a more informed investor because we're not asking every new entrant to the financial field to go get, you know, their MBA or a PhD in economics. That's an unreasonable expectation. So instead, we need to systematically build a tool set that people can use, a screener, if you will, so that they're not just riding blindly into high risk situations. Mm-hmm. And you know, part of where this came from is as a student of financial history, I've studied some of the greatest. And so one example is I look at Warren Buffett and we can easily track what his asset allocation has been over decades. And obviously he has one of the most stellar records, you know, out there. And if you look at how he's actively managed the capital risk, you'll notice that his asset allocation has swinged wildly from, you know, overweighting in cash and bonds to overweighting in stocks, and pretty extreme measures. And so what this really set me off on essentially a whole new theory of how to manage asset allocation. Most products in the marketplace are built off of modern portfolio theory, which kind of helps you define your risk tolerance as if that's a static thing in time, and then build an asset allocation. And then you're supposed to just hold that and ride straight through the storm. And in reality, there's a lot of changes that happen in an individual's life. But more importantly, when markets start to change, or especially we move into a crisis mode, suddenly anyone's risk tolerance goes way down. And so it encourages them to start taking an active hand, start making changes and moving stuff. And that's how we end up kind of hurting ourselves. So we're our own worst enemy, if you will. And so this is a tool that's designed to help you manage your risk relative to the situation you're in. Mm-hmm. And you know, believe it or not, we do have plenty of data that tells us this is an environment that historically is good for these things and bad for those things. And so we just need to make those adjustments accordingly.
So basically what we really saw, going back to last Mark, we really saw the global supply chain adjust from socially interactive businesses to non-socially interactive businesses like Google and so on. And that affected things worldwide. It also affected things here, anything to do with travel, tourism, hotels, restaurants, retail, and all that stuff was adversely affected. And you know what? It would be telling somebody, hey, look, you know, would the software be telling, hey, you need to move into these market sectors or move away from those? Help me understand that.
Yeah. So I really see the financial advisory business as having three components. The first is the advisor works with the client and you get to know what are their needs, wants, and wishes, and all of those things. The second is you actually start to look at, okay, how do we want to deploy the assets? So that's the asset allocation level of information. You know, where do we want to take risk? Because as you and I know, there's no such thing as no risk. So all we're really doing is we're choosing which risks we're willing to accept at any given time. Mm-hmm. And then the third component is the, okay, I've decided I am going to take this much equity risk, stocks. Okay, what stocks am I going to own? What companies, what sectors? And that's that bottom-up analysis. Mm-hmm. So as a portfolio manager in my day job, what we do is that bottom-up analysis, right? So once we decide these are the risks we want, how do we go and execute? What Watchpoint Analytics does is it does that middle part. And that middle part is, okay, if one needs to deploy capital, here's basically your risk reading right now. And it gives you asset allocation advice at the highest level, right? So conditions are favorable for you to take your normal equity risk position, or conditions are unfavorable, you want to have as little equity risk as possible. That's really where it fits into the piece. The website itself is designed and we will continue to add more and more tools to basically just give investors better clarity before they start making kind of big bets with what is most likely their life savings.
That's wonderful. Hey, look, you know what? I'm going to hold you off right there. We're going to have to take a little commercial break right now. Stick with us. We're going to be back with more with Sean Rolls.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us, savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hello, welcome back. This is Steve Sexton with the Saving with Steve show. We have Sean Rolls with us at Watchpoint Analytics. Now, I truly want to thank you for tuning in and appreciate you letting your friends and family and associates know about our show. All the replays are available at savingwithsteve.us. If you're enjoying the stories of helpful information and insights on Saving with Steve, I encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel so you never miss a show and check out a few of our affiliates at UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, Talk Radio New York City, E360 TV, and Las Vegas TV Network. All these networks are dedicated to empowering you to solve problems, uplift your spirit, and live a life of personal financial freedom. Hey, if you'd like to get more financial tips, you can obviously go to our Facebook page at Saving with Steve Sexton, join the Insiders Club, or get replays of these shows at savingwithsteve.us. Now, here we are back to Watchpoint Analytics and Sean Rolls. We've been talking about how things are adaptive, how it can help people move forward and reduce their risk. One of the things I'd like to talk about is this can help those, you know what, we all know the engineer mind. You have the engineer mind. I can tell that just by talking to you. My family's a whole bunch of engineers and finance people. And I see there's a lot of do-it-yourselfers out there. And when we go back to that 2008 or any big crisis where the stock market went up and everybody went out, the Watchpoint Analytics can give somebody that idea of saying, hey, look, I'm looking at the wrong things, but why is this saying to me that, hey, you're taking on way too much risk for what's going on right now? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I'll say, the entire reason why we create these tools is really for the person who's not going to dive in and spend all of their excess time trying to quickly become an expert. And so we try to make it as simple as possible to just give you a rough screener to tell you when conditions are favorable, kind of in between, or unfavorable. So that's really kind of the how to use part of it. Mm-hmm. And you know what I tell people is what's interesting about this environment that we're in right now is we're in an era of extremes. And what I mean by that is extreme low inflation, extremely low interest rates, as everybody knows. Even with this most recent move in interest rates over the past couple of weeks, we're still in an extremely low environment. And then more importantly, stretched PE levels, which is how the easiest way for us to gauge valuations in the market. Mm-hmm. And so we have all these like really simple tools that people normally look at, but in this environment, those tools are almost worthless in that they're giving us extreme readings. And so what do we do with that information? Because it doesn't fit my historical data set. So that's what we're busy doing, is trying to refine those types of tools. For an example, the price to earnings ratio, which is the easiest way to gauge whether or not a stock market is undervalued, mm-hmm. fairly valued, or overvalued. Well, that metric extends when you are in periods of low inflation, but nobody ever really bothers to tell you all that stuff, right? And so if you're just looking at the PE relative to its historical average, right now we have a very high reading. So how much information is that to me, right? Do I want to take risk? And so what we're systematically doing is bringing out tools to simplify and make it easier and put this stuff into perspective so that an investor can just log in, look at all these measures, and make a more informed decision. And so we start with what's currently on the website now is our model for the U.S. stock market. Mm-hmm. And we use the S&P 500 as our proxy for the stock market. And when we started this exercise, we were really just trying to come up with something or tease out, is there something better than the traditional balanced portfolio, the 60-40, 60% stocks, 40% bonds, the traditional asset allocation model. And what we found in doing the back test of 4 decades worth of data is that not only does the model outperform the benchmark, which we're using the balance fund as the benchmark, but in a lot of conditions, it outperforms the S&P 500. Even if you had bought and held all the way through all the storms, we still ended up with a significantly better return, but more importantly, a smoother ride. And this is why it matters to investors, especially the do-it-yourselfer, is all of us know that if we just put the money in the stock market and we give it a whole bunch of time, everything will work out.
Oh, yeah.
But the problem is experiencing the ride along the way. And when we have those big emergency circumstances, that's when you're most vulnerable for everything to go wrong and to make a big mistake. And so what this software is trying to do is just give you one additional tool to help you outmaneuver that risk to yourself, right? So it's trying to give you that tool to make you just a little bit better captain at sea, especially when the waves get real choppy.
Well, I can think of this with, you know, retirees, you know, what you people between the ages of 55, 75, or 80, and they all want, you know, they want returns to be certain. And the reality, it's not. And you know what, the market's going to do this. But if you can get a tool that would smooth that out a little bit, as opposed to going like this, but maybe like this, more of a wave than a big dip, that would be much more significant for the longevity of somebody's assets, income in retirement, to be able to handle health and other issues. Yeah, that's wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, it's precisely that. At the end of the day, what we're not doing is beating the market. What we're doing is outperforming a traditional buy and hold strategy or a traditional balanced fund by avoiding the worst parts of the market, mm-hmm. right? So when we get signals that tell us we are very ripe for a crisis, that's when we just want to take a few chips off the table. Let's lower our risk. Let's be prudent. And let's not expose ourselves to that massive, concerning type of market. Now, you know, what's kind of fascinating about all of this is, if, you know, we don't have crises that often, right? But when we have them, they're fairly big and they're very concerning. And they usually come on really fast. And what I mean by that, going back to what you said about the Great Financial Crisis, we had a period of time where we were getting significantly bad information, and yet the market kept charging higher until all of a sudden it reversed. And then it was just like straight line down. And what this software does is it picks up those conditions that are dangerous, and it gives you a quick heads up. And then it allows you to kind of make adjustments before that big drop down. That's kind of the key thing. But here's what's really, really important about it is, you know, over the 40-year period that we've been backtesting this data, what we find is periods of time after a crisis, we usually see, you know, when we see the right risk conditions, so when it goes to favorable, we notice that the runway there is really long, and there's usually a very nice, healthy period of positive economic growth and mm-hmm. market expansion. And I bring this up right now because January and February of this year, we were really starting to sense a lot of FOMO, that fear of missing out, right? Yep. Everybody clearly was scared of the market last year because we had a big batch of uncertainty dropped in our lap, and we don't like uncertainty. We don't know what to do with it. But as the market just chugged higher, we flipped into this year, and everybody's like, okay, the vaccine's rolling out. The, you know, there's light at the end of the tunnel. There's a recovery trade. Then it was almost like, hurry up, I got to get on this train before it leaves the station without me. And so what our research is showing us is that we're still in a high risk environment. And if you look around right now, you'll see where markets are compared to the fundamental economic reality is we're not out of the economic woods yet, but the markets are priced as if we are. And so that puts us at risk of one of two things happening, either prices coming down to reality, or we need to pass enough time for economic reality to catch up to prices. Mm-hmm. But the point is, it's still a high risk environment. And so what this tool is, you know, the other side of what it's trying to do is help people understand you don't need to worry about fear of missing out, because when the risk conditions lower, you typically have years of good runway in front of you. And so don't worry about the next couple of months if you're on the sidelines, because we're still in a high risk environment. But as soon as you see that risk condition change, that's when you want to start moving in, because you should have a fairly good amount of time in front of you to make the returns.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. So tell us how people can get involved with your software. Where do they go? And you know what? How simple is it for them to use? All that kind of good stuff.
So it's very easy. So it's www.watchpointanalytics.com. If you go there,
one more time, just so everybody can get it real quick.
Yeah, it's www.watchpointanalytics.com.
Perfect.
If you go to the website and just scroll to the bottom of the landing page, you'll see my email, so you can send questions direct to me. You'll see all the links to social media. We're on all the social media. The web page is a subscriber-based page. Now, don't let that concern you. It's free. It's always going to be free as long as I can possibly make it free. But we have it as subscriber base just so that it's harder for the bots to come in and strip all the data out. Mm-hmm. Right now we have available to you, there's fresh commentary constantly coming. So real quickly, just to give you an example, on the website, we have the US model currently up. We'll be adding the China, Great Britain, Eurozone, and China in the next 6 months. The China model went bullish last fall, and next up is the UK model. So, but we have articles articles that we put out and commentary that we give away. And then we'll be introducing a whole host of additional analytical tools that are very easy to use for the user, but extremely valuable in protecting your risk.
Hey, Sean, thank you for joining us. This has been wonderful. I'm just going to send a special note out to our UK, European listeners and Pacific Rim, the whole shot. They're going to want to have this. So everybody, this is Sean Rolls, Watchpoint Analytics. I want to thank you for being here and providing this tool for our everyday investors. It'll make a difference in their life, and I appreciate it.
Great. Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Hey, thanks for being with us today. Be safe. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care.
You know what? We're closing up the show just quick here. We had Brad Galbraith talk about domicile. ChangeMyDomicile.com. You can get the information there if you're looking to move out of a high-tax state into a lower or no-tax state. Get the tax scams. You can see that on the website, as well as we just talked to Sean Rolls. If you're an investor and a do-it-yourselfer, you want to check out Watchpoint Analytics. Next week, we're looking forward to a wonderful show. We'll look forward to seeing you then. Be safe, be healthy. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us for the Saving with Steve show, hosted by Steve Sexton. To learn more about the show and how to become a guest or sponsor, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Join us again next time as we continue to talk about everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happier relationship with money. This has been the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton.